The Breakfast Club.
I know that Adam White's excited because when he's got his Tottenham Hotspur hoodie on, you know that the world's a positive place. I don't know if they're playing today or not, if it's a reference to their challenges in the Champions League or whatever it might be. I don't know. But he's up and about. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. No, it's a situation where I'm low on the wash cycle. So I'm sort of just finding whatever I can find today. It's a bit lazy. It's not. Today's my busy one of my busier work days, so I really shouldn't be dressed like this. It's inappropriate. It's unprofessional.
Oh, no.
But I really couldn't find much. So that was. It was in found in my cricket bag as well, so it's not really very professional at all.
Oh, gee. What a bugger.
Yeah. But you know when you just know that you're low on the wash cycle, so
I
most
do.
Of the things are in the wash and. Or, you know, they're still in the washing machine, or they're not dry, all those sorts of things. So it was a bit of a drama this morning. But anyway.
Well, that's no good. I'm concerned about your drama. We don't need that in your life.
So it's official, Daniel.
What's the question?
La Nina is here. Now, we were thinking that it was probably going to be here. It's been on watch for a while. It had then been an alert, and now it's official. La Nina is here for the summer.
Who's she staying with?
She's staying with most of Eastern Australia, to be perfectly honest.
Is she a Spanish cousin or something?
So... Be prepared
is
for
a...
Is
she an au pair that you've hired? Is that what that is? Is that where Nina comes from? She's from España? Just here for the holidays?
You've had an au pair, haven't you?
No.
Haven't you?
No.
I thought you've had an au pair.
Never had an au pair. I had a babysitter.
Yeah.
Who would come after school a couple of days a week, back in the old days when the
she
kids needed it.
She called Carrot Cake, didn't she? Was that...
She was. She... Maddie is her name, not she. Maddie was a magnificent babysitter. She's a vegetarian, but she was able to cook some meat, which was great. But she cooked up some delicious meals for the kids.
I remember I was involved in that one day.
Magnificent.
Like a cupcake muffin type situation.
Yes, no, Maddie was a star. We'd like to have Maddie back in our life. Although, as often happens in those situations, they grow up and have their own lives.
That's right. They go onto greener pastures.
Yeah, they go and do things for themselves, the selfish people.
I think au pairs are a cop-out.
Well, no, a lot of people out there are very busy.
I hate that comment.
Well, they are. Some of them are out there working high-power jobs, stressful jobs, long hours, so you got to have someone look after the kids. So I get it.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to go there.
What's that?
No, I'm not going to say
it. No, go on, say it.
No, I'm not
going
to say
it. Go on, say it.
I will not.
Why not?
Because I might get in trouble.
Some people
from
out
a
there
variety of different
find
people.
Themselves in a situation where they need some support.
Mm. Anyway, they're an unusual thing, an au pair, aren't they?
I'd like one. No, not anymore. The kids are fine. I would have liked one. My word. Why wouldn't you want one?
Anyway,
give you a chop out.
So back to La Nina, please.
Was she the au pair?
La Nina means that we are going to get a wet summer.
Oh, gee.
It means we are going to get a coolish summer.
Oh, gee.
And we're sort of going back to 2010 to 2012 areas where it was a very, very wet period. So
going to need some help there.
That's not good for people that like to play cricket because there might be a fair few extra weekends that are affected by rain.
Right.
We're getting almost to this territory of floods.
Floods!
It's not good. It's not good. At least it means it's unlikely to be like heat waves and bushfires and all that sort of stuff.
Well, that's a positive.
So there you go.
That's a positive.
Because just the next 2 days, Daniel, are going to be very wet.
So what sort of millage does Nina bring with her from Spain?
It's unclear at this stage, but heavy falls. Big numbers.
And more so in the northern regions. Is that what we're saying?
Well,
sort of Queensland-y.
That's
the tropical
probably
areas.
More likely to be the case. But what tends to happen is with the airstreams, is that it will start to come down towards Victoria and we will cop it probably not as significantly as Queensland and New South Wales, but we will still find ourselves not having the summers we would normally have.
Is it like these airstreams you speak of?
Yeah.
Is that like the East Australian current in Finding Nemo, where the turtles sort of find their way from one part of the country to another without really trying?
I'm unclear about this, but don't...
Have you not seen Finding Nemo?
No.
Sorry?
No.
What? Now, if you had no pair, your kids would have seen Finding Nemo.
I think my kids have seen Finding Nemo.
Why haven't you seen it?
Well, it's a little bit like me about watching TV shows involving cruise ships. If they're just underwater, it's just a bit boring.
It's not just underwater.
Everything's in the same environment.
Gee, and you have a crack at me about The Office, and you haven't seen Finding Nemo. Goodness me.
I think I have seen it, some of it.
Anyway. You said you haven't.
Anyway. Well, you know when the shows are on, you come in for 10-minute bursts and you go away? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I sort of do.
I know Nemo. Really... He's orange. Clownfish.
He's a beautiful fish. He's got a little floppy fin. Just a little birth defect. But he gets through. Like, he works hard. Good little fella. His old man cares about him a lot. Lost his mother early in those. Just lost his mum.
Did he ever have an au pair?
No, well, but Dory in the end, I suppose, played the au pair role. She looked after him because he was lost.
It's a mentor?
Well, she kept forgetting things. So I don't think she's a mentor, Dory, but she did sort of look after him. She's very good. Just keep swimming. That's what happened. That's what happened there. So La Nina swims with Nemo. Is that what we're saying?
Yep. Don't ask me any more questions. I wanted Jane Bunn on this morning, but that hasn't happened yet, so I'd like her to explain it.
Did you seriously want Jane Bunn on this
morning? Well, I did. I put it on the WhatsApp as a request.
Why did that happen? I thought that was a joke.
Oh, well, obviously Joey did too.
Well, Jane might like to sleep.
Anyway.
It's a good SMS that's just come through here. They can't predict the weather 3 days out, let alone the whole summer. Like, the Bureau, your mates at the Bureau and all their millage chat, they'd be lucky to get what's happening in the next 20 minutes right. Recent form. Now, and let's be fair, that's the reality. They've had a shocking season.
Are you criticising my people?
I'm criticising your people. They've had a shocking season. Couldn't have been further from the truth or less accurate with their predictions of recent times. Now, if you are from the Bureau, I want to hear from you. Give us a call.
There's a good text here. There's a good text here. Rain not good in country at the moment. Driving past crops damaged, costing plenty. So it's not just about the cricket, boys. Of course it's not just about the cricket. But it has been a very, very wet time already.
Yeah, it's been a very wet period.
Yeah, and continues to be. It's extraordinary how wet it's been. Because we were talking to someone last week, one of our track manager friends, who said that they'd had all of the November rain in the first 12 days.
Yeah,
or
something. So,
yeah.
No, that's not ideal. So La Nina is going to be a problem, is what we're saying. What about I had a business partner who moved to Queensland because he couldn't deal with the whole Victorian thing.
I've got a friend that's done that too.
Yeah. I'd heard about our Spanish friend who's coming for the summer and texted him yesterday. Fair to say he's a bit flat.
Oh, so you knew about El Nino too, whatever it's, El Nino or El Nino?
Well, she's the Spanish au pair. It's coming for the summer. That's all I kept hearing yesterday. The Spanish au pair is coming for the summer.
El Nina, as opposed to... No,
La Nina.
La Nina, as opposed to El Nino.
You got to say it with the Y after the second N.
Yeah.
La Nina. El Nino.
That reminded me about something else. Now I forgot it again.
Sorry about that. I want to talk to you about toilets.
Oh, here we go.
What?
Public toilets or...
No.
Right.
Well, no, they're not public toilets. They're sporting toilets.
All right, okay. Yep.
I think it's very important that this news is broken. The ATP are going to restrict bathroom breaks to no more than 3 minutes after a series of long toilet visits led to accusations of gamesmanship. The clock will begin when a player reaches the bathroom. This is in the paper today. With players allowed an additional 2 minutes for a change of clothes. Jeez, it must have been a nasty break. Nasty toilet break. We need a change of clothes. Things have gone really wrong there. I hadn't read that bit. Players will be permitted only one break per match. It can be taken only between sets. Now, this is good for tennis. If they just get rid of the medical timeout, then the game will be much more watchable from a sports viewer's perspective. Although, if you're outside, like sometimes you need more than 3 minutes. Like, that's, I don't know, that's a real pressure cooker environment.
Do you reckon there'd be a referee with a stopwatch next to the cubicle just saying?
There will be. The clock will begin when a player reaches the bathroom. So someone will be there, somewhere near the vicinity of the bathroom, and then, righto, time starts now.
Go.
There'll be that. As a standard going forward, that's exactly what should be happening in tennis, and the injury timeout's a joke, as we've discussed before. But I like this. I like this initiative to try and speed things up and take away this gamesmanship element. It's not really gamesmanship, but I think it's bordering on cheating.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely gamesmanship.
Yeah.
But it's not cheating because it's in the rules.
No, that's true, but I just philosophically.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be the rules, and now it's being dealt with.
Can you ask for extra time?
like the draft tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not quite sure you're going to get the pick selected in
time. That's right.
I don't know. It doesn't say that here.
They get in there and they, you know, wasted this first minute here. I'm in trouble. Can you then abort?
Can you bank? If you're there for a minute and it's not quite working out, you bank the next 2 minutes?
Look, I'm not going to take my time here. Can I use it in a later stage? Because sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it can be unpredictable. You think something's going to happen and it doesn't.
No, I'm fully aware.
Or the other way around. Sometimes you think it's going to be a quick session and it might not be.
It is a problem.
Although it would be a lot quicker if, I would imagine you wouldn't be allowed to take your phone in there with you.
I'd hope not. I think the sporting integrity measures.
No, well, that's right.
Might eradicate the phone from the cubicle at the time.
There are often people that take longer in the toilet than they should because they've taken their phone in there with them.
No doubt. It's the old newspaper gag. You know, Dad used to go and just disappear with the newspaper. He'd come back 3 or 4 hours later. Where have you been? Just on the toilet. Just reading the newspaper. Now it's the phone. You're just scrolling through bloody Facebook.
We used to have a producer that worked in here that would go to the toilet and take the newspaper with him. And
Maisie?
Be gone for some... No.
Is that why he got the kibber?
He was gone for some time. And he would just say, yeah, just took the paper in with me to the toilet. Like, mate, you're meant to be producing a radio show. He'd be gone for ages.
You can't do that when you're the producer. You've got to be on your game like our man Frank, who never misses a moment. In fact, he hasn't been to the toilet in 5 years, Frank.
Thank you, Mother, for the rabbit.
Well, that's exactly what he's doing, because he's not going and using his 3 minutes up when he's around these parts. I'll give you the tip.
There's a lot of
action stations.
There's a lot of text messages coming in here criticising the Bureau of Meteorology.
Yeah, good.
And almost being personal against me. I don't work for the Bureau.
Yes, you do. You basically do.
Jeez.
What's happened there? Where's the personal one? Half has there been one time this year where Whitey's given an accurate millage prediction? I think not, says the press. Now, the press has a thing for you and your predictions. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
Didn't work out for that occasion. Yeah. Jumpy Bendigo says the start of the toilet timeout. It's like the old World of Sport woodshop. Axeman, ready! 3, 2, 1, go! Do you think there's a spot?
It would have to be that. If they're going to put a time limit on it, maybe it's the 3 minutes go up, the toilet flushes, and just wherever you're at, time up, the cubicle door flies open, some flashing lights and sirens, out you go.
Well, I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think it's a good thing for the industry going forward. Is there room for the wood chop anywhere? Do we need that back somewhere? Where would it go?
Well, it's better wood chop being in the Olympics than half the other sports that
there
are in
go.
There.
Let's get to the Olympics. That was good fun, the wood chop on a Sunday morning.
It was.
I'd love watching that.
Well, there hasn't been a Royal Melbourne show for 2 years. We'd take the kids absolutely to the wood chop.
Yeah, no, we've done that. It's not quite every Sunday morning on water sport, though.
I'm surprised more people don't chop their feet off.
Sorry. Don't have an accident.
You know what I'm saying? But they're very sharp blades, and they're used at quite velocity, and they're very close proximity to their feet.
Well, these are professionals.
I know.
These are craftsmen and women doing their
once
thing.
Once in a blue moon, if you and I are playing cricket, we might miss the ball.
Rubbish.
Blue moon.
Wash your mouth out. Great to have Smacker with us on a Wednesday morning. She's really spruced up that pink T-shirt. It's a bit glittery. She's got the blazer on. Very corporate attire. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I caused quite a stir when I walked in the studio this morning.
It's bordering on intimidating.
Well, do you know, it possibly is the fact that I've also got something other than just my runners on, my street runners, you know, that I normally wear. I do have like a 2-inch heel on, so it may have been the height.
Well, that around these parts, it's very intimidating.
It's just a wedge.
Because there's none of that
it's
around here.
It's just a wedge, but I have got the little extra height as well. So it could be a combination of the blazer and the
No, I think you just came in with
wedge.
Real purpose and right. real sort of, you know.
Well, I thought I better straighten you guys up.
The blazer factor and all that sort of stuff.
Well, it is a T-shirt under the blazer. Like, I haven't gone completely over the top.
No, well, but normally it's the VCA tracksuit top, and Whitey gets a bit intimidated by that.
Well,
so, in fact, any way you walk in, Whitey's intimidated.
Goodness me.
You've got your heels on, your big pumps on, or your wedgies on.
And not with your not my wedgies. Wedges. Yeah, you're right. That's true. I actually ran into Andrew Mays at Cricket Victoria.
We don't talk about him anymore.
Oh, no. He's
right. Former Breakfast Bite man.
Yes, and he was very disappointed that he's not going to be able to rub into you that he doesn't actually get a Cricket Victoria attire uniform. He gets the Melbourne Stars, so he's
not interested in that stuff anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Very disappointed he's not going to be able to rub that into you.
You're apparently a Melbourne Starsman.
Yeah, but I'm not interested in that sort of paraphernalia.
Why is that?
You want the traditional stuff.
Melbourne Stars aren't traditional though; they're a new franchise.
Exactly. I want the VCA stuff, not the.
Yes.
Not the green or red stuff.
And Andrew is very aware of that.
Bubblegum sort of stuff.
Bubblegum. Oh, aggressive. It's a brand new concept in the last 10 years. Mm. People are getting around it and you're just poo-pooing it.
Yeah, I want the traditional stuff.
You are a traditionalist.
I don't think
we
give him anything with his attitude. Mm. I don't think there's anything back in the Christmas hamper for him.
No, I was considering just sneaking down.
That's total disrespect to the Big Bash competition and the paraphernalia that surrounds it.
Mm.
Speaking of, my understanding, I was speaking to someone yesterday, Cheryl.
Yes.
This concerned me greatly.
Oh, okay.
Greatly.
Oh, dear.
It concerned me. My understanding is that you will be jetting off to Adelaide for the final of the Renegades, and you've been walking around the offices of Cricket Victoria saying, can't wait to go and see my Renegades in the final tomorrow in Adelaide. Is this true or is this not true?
They are my Renegades.
No, they're
not. My Stars.
You hate the Renegades. You're a Stars woman. You've been on the board. You've shown your hand here. You've got your colours printed on your face.
I was wearing a green blazer yesterday, actually, and I thought I'd better not wear that over to Adelaide. But no, well, the borders have opened between South Australia and Victoria, so it's kind of just really nice timing. Unfortunately, the final is in Western Australia, so we can't get across there for that. So I did want to show, as head of female cricket at Cricket Victoria, did want to show my support.
Did you just?
Of the many players and staff that sit in my team at Cricket Vic. So, it'll be nice to get across there and support. There is we're not allowed to touch them. We're not allowed to touch them. We're not allowed to
Is that something we encourage these days in the office place?
No. But it's probably relevant because the players, the club has been really generous and have asked that the players, they can have a family member or a friend flown over by the club to be involved in that, which is really great considering the last couple of months has been really tough. But they are, there has to be a distance because there's just that risk because particularly they're then heading over, hopefully, all going well in the game tomorrow night, heading over to Perth. So we don't want any risk from people coming over from Victoria and
right
infection risk. So yeah,
don't touch that ball.
I don't know what's going to happen if that does come over into where we're sitting, but there's kind of a bit of a protective bubble around them so that they are able to freely head across that border if that's what happens.
Right. Okay.
But you're right. I probably wouldn't be touching the players much anyway, to be completely honest.
Maybe a high five after the performance or something?
Yeah, maybe. But
so that, yeah, okay. Mm. So how come they're allowed to go? Are they a hit and run on if they win? It doesn't matter. One of the teams will go from Adelaide to Perth for the final.
Correct.
So it's just a hit and run sort of fly in, fly out mission, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yep. So the Renegades players got into Adelaide on yesterday, I think. I think they arrived yesterday or the day before and had some good training sessions yesterday. So they'll be there for a couple of days. But, yeah, if the game is tomorrow night, the Challenger, I think it's called, which is between second on the ladder, which is the Renegades, and the winner of 3 and 4, the loser's out. And then the winner of second versus whoever the winner of 3 and 4 is goes to Perth. So, yeah, and that's games on Saturday. So they'll be very quickly jumping on a plane on Friday, whoever those wins that game.
Which means you need the Spanish au pair that's coming for the summer at your house, the Nina. You look after the kids because if you're off gallivanting around the country, you're going to need someone to look after Rubes and Zave.
Well, I've got one. I've got two, actually.
You've got two? Yeah, Whitey, this is extreme. We were talking about the one au pair this morning. Our girl, Smack's got two.
Mm-hmm.
You'd run away from a thruple.
It is.
Yeah, that
apparently.
Is. That is true. One I've got to say is pulling their weight far more than the other.
Oh, you have to sack someone.
Oh, it's probably going to be difficult to sack Johnny Mac, but so.
Oh, John and Ollie are in town.
John and Ollie are in town, which is
nice.
So good. We were talking about the last time they were able to come and spend some time with us here in Melbourne. It's been a very long time, so it's been very. It's just been so nice to have them around. It was Ruby's birthday yesterday. Oh. So it's all happening. So, yeah, it's been very nice. So, no, I would not call Mum my au pair, but she works very hard when she comes to my house.
You've got your mother working to
I
the
don't.
Phone.
I say to her, no, Mum,
awesome.
Stop doing that.
You're a disgrace.
She folds all my clothes and, oh, no, she's
my
she's a
would
lovely.
Never do that.
Your mum wouldn't?
No.
And I quite admire that too.
It's because she's accessible all the time. John and Ollie, it's a bit different. They've
been, but she's not,
they've been trapped away from the family.
My mum's not folding clothes or ironing, and we don't even have an iron.
Ollie's not ironing. I mean, no, I'm not saying that that then downgrades what she's doing.
You ungrateful git you are.
Oh, she's an iron. I mean, she's folded five loads of washing, but didn't see the iron come out.
Hey, I want to ask you a serious question because we've spoken all week about Tim Payne and all that sort of thing, and that's very much from a male perspective and whatever else. Now, someone that's been on a Stars board, been involved in high-level sport for a long time, even now with what you're doing, I don't even know how to ask the question. How have you seen the week unfold?
Yeah, it was a shock. That's the initial part of it for me, that it was a shock to hear that news. And I think probably for me, I agree with Tim Payne in that what he's done is really stupid and not okay on quite a few different levels. It is a really tricky one, though, because there is... When I first read about the story, I got a few snippets of it and probably formed an opinion. Didn't jump on social media like many people do, and the outrage machine kind of can. I know you talk about this a lot, Whitey. It can kind of get going pretty quickly, and there is a lot more to this story, as there is with most stories. You know, often we will see a snippet or a headline, and we kind of get on, form our opinion really quickly, but. There is more to this, and it's a really tricky situation for me. It's not great. What happened isn't great for many different reasons. But the reality is, the CA Integrity Unit went through a process, and I've got a lot of faith in that process. I've seen it kind of happen, and there's a lot of detail that goes in that. They do know the full story, and they came to the conclusion that they came to. So I'm pretty comfortable with that, but it's not a great look from someone like Tim Payne, who, as I said, I was really shocked to hear that he was involved in something like that.
So do you think athletes get it, this whole thing around PR and brand protection, that the reality is they might have one view on the incident, but the other thing is the reality of brand protection, looking after sponsors, image, all that sort of thing that just goes with the territory?
Well, potentially. I mean, I don't know any detail of this, and none of us know probably all the detail, but maybe that's why Tim has come to the conclusion he did and had to step away, because he does understand what the impact of this becoming public would be, even though he was cleared from a Cricket Australia integrity point of view. I think it's really difficult. I mean, we're all human, aren't we? Regardless of the position we hold, and I think we do need to be really mindful of the fact that people can make mistakes and do the wrong things. And I think what's really important, particularly from my point of view as head of female cricket now at Cricket Victoria, is that it's a process, it's something that's ongoing in terms of creating really safe, fun, enjoyable, welcoming environments for anyone who wants to engage in this case, in cricket. And so I think that for me is a really important part of it, that the hand gets put up to say, you know, we're working on this, and we're just continually trying to create that really positive environment.
I've got a question for both of you, because just from this text message, I've got two questions for you, for both of you. But the text here, not all sports people want to be or should be role models. What? How do you, for the two of you that were professional athletes and professional coaches, what do you think of that statement?
I think it comes with the turf. I think you're not duty bound, but it comes with being in a position of privilege that you are a role model for the wider population. How wide that is, you know, depending on your reach and all that sort of stuff. I think it's part of the turf. You, when you sign up to be part of this, you know that the scrutiny, the pressure, the expectations on you are higher than the average Joe. And that's just life in a professional sporting landscape.
Sherelle?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I know I've probably spoken about this quite a bit on this show that it is. I agree. It's part of the role. It's part of what you take on. And I think that it is important. I know some people say, I just wanted to play sport. I didn't want to be a role model. Well, there's lots of ways to play sport. And do it where you're not in that public eye. It's at a lower level, yes, yep. And you're not going to get the rewards and the payment and everything else that comes with it. You can still play sport, but by agreeing to play at a certain level and to hold certain roles within that, you have to accept some of the other things. Some of it's fitness testing or media commitments that you have to do. And for me, another level of that is that people do hold you in high regard.
So the second question I've got for you is, in your role at Cricket Victoria, did you remind your players of their responsibilities and off the back of this, or do you feel you don't have to in regards to social media, in regards to communication devices, etc.?
Not directly on the back of this. Most of the players that I'm working with, particularly in that space, are away at the moment in the WBBL. Some of them have come back into City Power Centre over the last couple of days. But there's a lot of education done around this space. There really is. So I think that my position on that would be that you would, as part of what you would normally do, there's an education piece that goes around that, but you would like to think that your systems are in place and you've covered it. But yeah, potentially, maybe it's something that maybe it's just another example to use when you are having those conversations to say, this is the sort of thing that can happen.
It's a fairly prominent example. I reckon it'll be put out a fair bit in sporting organisations across the country when they're going through these policies and procedures.
So you don't feel you had to speak to your girls at training last night or over the weekend?
No need for that.
Because I mean, my gut reaction is no, you don't have to. But then when you see it continually happening, these sorts of things, whether it's social media or whatever, and I'm not talking about specifically what Tim did, but just in general terms of some of the stuff that happens, you know, yeah.
There's a lot of education that goes around these areas. And as someone says off the SMS there, just come through, this sort of interaction that Timothy's involved himself in.
Risque
interactions. This is actually, my understanding is, and the SMS tells us as well, and this is only a small sample size, clearly, it's not too far off being almost normal.
I know, and this is what I'm saying.
These crazy kids do. Yeah. It's not our wheelhouse, I don't think. We're old people.
The text I get from my wife is, can you get the milk on the way home?
That's me, milk and bread. Yeah, that's what I get.
What's for dinner? What time are you getting home?
And if it's a photo, it's a photo of something I've left uncleaned or or put away. That's the photo I get. With the angry face emoji. That's the photo I get sent from my partner. I don't get these other ones, and that's okay.
I might send photos of the backyard grass when it's just been crisply cut.
But that's to us, and that's risque for us. But it's a different world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think that as a whole, the collective we, are getting better at understanding social media and the permanency of things on the internet.
Yeah,
and
that's the big one.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the really challenging one for younger people is that, you know, you're doing whatever it is you're doing. You're having a bit of fun in whatever way it is. You might make a comment or do something with your mates or your friends, but that is there forever and people can find it if they look for that.
Yep.
And that's really challenging because I'm sure that we've all done things as younger people that you probably think, gee, I wouldn't like that to come out. I'm 10 years down the track. My views are different. The way I behave is different. And I wouldn't like that to come out. So that, for me, is part of the tricky one for young people coming through. I mean, you've got kids half in. We've got younger kids who haven't kind of waded into this space yet. But my feeling is that they've got a better understanding of that now, and that hopefully that it'll be a different situation for them as they move through that.
Yeah. Do you agree? That's probably fair.
But there continues to be different examples of it. So Steph Chiocchi, or is that Chiocchi, who you used to coach.
Yep.
You know, Captain of the Magpies. All of a sudden it pops up that she was at a fancy dress party dressed up as an American Indian, and all of a sudden she's having to apologise for her views that happened when she was a teenager, and almost being seen as racist, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. But this is where we're at. And this is something that happened 10 or 12 years ago. Now, what we did 10 or 12 years ago is very different to what we do today. Mm. What's deemed as acceptable is very different today to what it was 10 years ago.
Well, we discussed that on Friday, didn't
we? I know, but it's just... But these are the sorts of challenges that athletes are happening, people with profile are happening, is that people are... And I feel uncomfortable about this, but people are trawling through Facebook accounts and... You know, social media accounts trying to find evidence that can bring someone down.
Yeah, well, that's not what happens. That's just athletes. You got politicians and
corporate people
leaders,
in public life.
Public life, yeah. They are having this thrown at them as well. So, and you're right. We evolve as human beings. We mature and we learn as we go, and we make mistakes and we learn from them. As you said before, if you're a recidivist and you're a repeat offender, then we've got an issue.
Yeah, that's right.
But outside of that.
And individually we grow and we learn and develop, you would hope. But as a society, and I think that's your point too, Whitey, is that things that we thought as a society were kind of more of a normal thing, we understand the damage and the hurt some of those things can do now. So we've moved on from that as a collective as well, not just as individuals.
Tom Harley's a busy man, the CEO of the Sydney Swans. He's getting on a plane. I think that plane might be coming to Melbourne. Let's find out. Tom, good morning.
G'day, Half. How are you?
Very well, mate. Very well indeed. You coming to town, are you?
Yes. So we're looking forward to getting to Melbourne. It's been a while since I've been down in Melbourne. And obviously the draft starting tonight, and big night for all the clubs, and certainly a big night for the Swans.
16-31-39 amongst your six picks, depending on how many you take and what you manipulate through the draft with the Kinnear Beats and the recruiting team there. What sort of briefings do you get as a CEO on draft day, leading up to draft day?
Yeah, I sit on this management committee. We keep that pretty tight, I think. More so when you're starting to look at recontracting your own players, looking at potential trades and the like, you get more involved. I think it's important that when you've got a recruiting team, as you said, mentioned, headed by Kinnear Beetson and Simon Dalrymple, they watch the players from 15, 16 years old, so you really have to back them in. But we get a briefing as much as anything, so that when we do recruit the players, we've had a bit of background and know how to, I guess, assimilate them to the club as best as possible. So I really enjoy it. I'm a footy person and love the draft.
Well, so do I, Tom. I think it's so fascinating to see the players come through and the excitement and just the way they are prepared. And, I mean, we were just having a bit of a conversation earlier about some of the challenges that young people these days have coming through as opposed to what we did. It's a really intense, even before they get drafted, it's quite an intense process for those players, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can only imagine what it's been like the last couple of years. It's an anxious time. It typically coincides with a pretty important time in your schooling as well. But particularly the Victorian kids this year, the little amount of football they've actually played, I'm sure some are feeling like they haven't had the chance to put their best foot forward. The recruiters are certainly having to probably speculate a bit more than perhaps they would have hoped and normally do. But I guess when it comes to landing at the club, from a existing players' point of view, the numbers are relevant. The senior players really just want to see what the effort's like when they come into the club, and then you've got another opportunity, I guess, to make that first impression. So it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, it is. And I was going to ask you about the impact of the reduced amount of footy that these players have been able to engage in over the last couple of years. What is the impact of that that you've seen on these players? Is are they a similar cohort coming through, or do you see some differences in what their experiences have been recently?
I'm a bit too removed to make specific and educated comments on that. I think everyone just goes in with their eyes wide open. It probably means that when you are doing your research and your investigations, you're having to lean a lot on, I guess, more historic data, and that might be vision, that might be interviews. I think what it has done, and this is really just my personal opinion as opposed to the club, that if you're in the frame to be drafted, you've obviously demonstrated a high level of resilience to keep going. I think everyone acknowledges the last couple of years has been challenging. It's certainly challenging for 17, 18, 19-year-old boys and girls. So I think that's been the challenge. And as I said, there's probably a bit more of a speculation. But in saying that, the WA kids and the SA kids have played a lot of footy, and you've been able to investigate that and see a lot more of their game.
Now, Tom, you've got 16, 31 and 39. They're your first three picks. Do you think you'll go in with those picks? Are you looking at potentially pushing up or swapping into next year? Because the mail is that there could be a fair bit of swapping and changing going on in the draft tonight.
Yeah, I think you have to go in with your eyes absolutely wide open. And it's a bit like any list management decision or any business decision. If you're given an opportunity or provide an opportunity to get better, you take it. And so we'll certainly be open to that. Again, these are the specifics that Kinnear and Simon have been working on, particularly over the last couple of weeks as the trade period's finished and the clubs have a bit more certainty around their draft order. So we'll be open-minded, but certainly an overarching mandate just to get better if the opportunity presents.
And do you feel, I know it's a sort of a pretty basic question, but do you feel if you do take your 31 and your 39 or whatever it ends up being with the father-sons that you're going to get maybe a better chance to get a good player in because there is a bit of uncertainty, particularly around the Victorian players?
Yeah, possibly. I think it's inside the top 40 are generally pretty good picks. The first two rounds. I mean, we've had some great success with picks in the 30s. So really, if you speak to all the recruiters, they certainly do a lot of work through the middle part, and deep part of the draft, history's littered with Brownlow medalist Destin Ferris from those picks in the draft and rookie picks as well. So you have to put the same emphasis on those ones and maybe even in a strange sort of way a bit more to unearth some gems there because you don't know where your next star's coming from.
Hey, it must have been nice to see the big bud out there on day one with the young fellas. Tom, he looked pretty good to me.
Well, I had to check what the classification for day one was. I think it was 4-year players and 18-plus-year players. Lance was out there and he looked really good. He's had a really good couple of off seasons. He obviously missed a lot of footy there 18 months ago, but had a strong season last year. And I know that he's had a really good off season. Great to see him out there, and it gives everyone a bit of spring in their step. And when we draft some players and the next couple of nights, and hopefully they're training on Monday morning, and the big fellas out there, that'll give them a bit of a kick as well.
Cricket 22 is the new big ant game for your consoles, for the PlayStation, the Xbox, and all those type of things. And Tim Payne, as captain of the men's team, was on the cover with Meg Lanning, the captain of the women's team. That was until last week when the news broke, and I'm sure there's been some other elements of the game that have had to be changed and have caused a lot of amount of frustration and stress for Ross Simons, the CEO of Big Ant Gaming, who joins us. Ross, good morning.
Good morning. G'day. Yeah, it's been an interesting time since Friday.
So when did you hear the news, Ross? Did you get a bit of a heads up on this story, or were you just following it like the rest of us?
I was following it like everybody else. I was actually in an interview with the gaming press. I don't normally get across to this side. I was with the gaming press on Friday. I walk out, and as I finish the interview, and we've done all the videos with Tim on the front and all the rest of it, the news hits, phone goes mad, and scramble for the last 4 or 5 days.
So can I get, without being, remembering we are on radio and expletives are very bad, Ross, can I get your initial reaction to this situation when you've heard the news?
Well, I was actually, it was a horrible situation because I'd gone to Sydney, I'd done these interviews, and I got the text messages as I got on the plane. So I was actually stuck on a plane not being able to call people and just sit there on the plane going, okay, well, this will be fun when I land.
And so what was the first steps then when you did land? Was it an immediate acknowledgement that this would be the case? Is it as straight as he's not the captain anymore, so therefore we need someone new on the front cover?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest thing was, you know, we've got Meg and we have an equal prominence thing with all our sports, whether it's the AO or whatever we're doing. And so we needed a captain. Yeah, so my first thought is, okay, I'll ring Cricket Australia. They'll tell me who the captain is, right? didn't exactly go to plan. So the guys here worked for about 4 or 5 days because there's a hell of a lot to it. So we've got the cover, and if it was just a matter of changing the cover, it'd be fine. But, you know, we get people in. You might have seen the guys like in Hollywood suits, you know, with the dots.
Yep.
We'll get a maxi in, or we'll get, you know, cricketers in. In fact, we got a couple of the women in from the Australian team. So we're trying to be as authentic as we possibly can. And that means we have to unwind a whole lot of stuff in the game to do with Tim. You know, it's basically we've got to work out as best we can. And, you know, Cummins is the vice captain, so that's what we stepped up with.
It's amazing. So how many hours were people working on this over the last 5 days? And how many people were working on it to make the changes to get it back out?
So there's probably 50 not getting any sleep for the last 4 or 5 days. So, because it is really, we're trying to be respectful of the sport, and so that what you see this summer is what is reflected, you know, in the game itself. Because we get picked up on the smallest of things, like a player that doesn't wear an arm guard or does wear an arm guard and stuff like that, let alone, you know, not having the right captain and the right, you know, the right squad. So, you know, we get thrown curveballs. You know, Stokes will come now, and, you know, he was a late change, and that's about as late as we like, you know, let alone, you know, the Friday before the launch. And I guess the biggest thing is we had to deal with Sony, PlayStation, Xbox, and those guys who normally take months to make decisions. They were really good. They were able to work through the weekend as well. So we had some of the largest corporations in the world actually pulling stuff for us.
Does this happen often, Ross? Do these things sort of pop up often in sport? I mean, you mentioned the Australian Open game that you do, and I've, as you know, I'm a bit of an Xbox man through my times, through the journey, and I've played these games, and I quite like them. So do you have these issues often? Do they pop up?
Pretty rare. It's pretty rare that it happens this close.
Yeah.
You know, like it normally is a bit. The closest thing I ever had to it was I had to trash a £200,000 London Underground campaign because someone decided to get into a bit of a fight before an Ashes.
Right.
But, the biggest one there was they claimed they didn't do it, right? So that doesn't help because you hold off and think, okay, I'm going to believe this guy. So the next thing you know, he's saying he didn't do it and then the footage comes out. So, yeah, I think the right things happened here that, things have gone the right way for the circumstances, and we've been able to proceed, you know, as we should.
Let's head now to Tasmania, because think what you will of the situation. The Australian cricket team has lost its test captain, and that's a big story. Brett Stubbs is the Mercury Sports editor down there in Tassie. Joins us on the line. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning.
It's a big story, and the Cricket Tasmanian crew weren't happy yesterday. Chairman Andrew Gagan with a very strongly worded press release and statement to the world. What did you make of the release?
Yeah, it was interesting. We got whispered that this was coming, but it was even stronger than what I thought it was going to be, because obviously Cricket Tasmania falls under the Cricket Australia umbrella. They do have an independent board, but ultimately Cricket Tasmania receives most of its funding and
you know, is part of Cricket Australia. So it's quite a strong statement to make against your governing body.
Yeah, and it was an enormous show of faith and support in Tim Payne as a Tasmanian cricketer. And one of his comments was, in conversations I've had in recent days, it's clear that the anger amongst the Tasmanian cricket community and general public is palpable. Is that your take on it as well?
Yeah, definitely. Like all Tasmanians, like all cricket lovers, I suppose, we were shocked and disappointed on Friday when this story broke and that Tim was stepping down and for the reasons he was stepping down, and there's no excusing the behaviour. But I think the anger rose on Saturday with the new chairman's statement that if he had been in charge at the time, Tim basically would have been sacked. Well, the Cricket Australia's own investigation into Tim's actions found that he hadn't breached any code of conduct. And if you set your own standards and your employee hasn't breached those standards, what are you being sacked for? The only difference Cricket Tasmania sees between when the investigation was held and now is that it's become public, and they think it's just a knee-jerk reaction and a PR display to say that they would have sacked him now.
Well, it's a pretty clear position from Cricket Tasmania. What's the general sense that you're getting from fans, cricket fans down in Tassie?
Yeah, like I said, the initial disappointment was there in Tim, and you know he was held in such high regard because he did do a terrific job as Australian captain, and that should not be forgotten in all this. But it was just the Cricket Australia lack of support. You know, this story has gone from Tim's actions now to one of governance and accountability, and that's where the spotlight is now on Cricket Australia. And you know, we've seen they've had issues with the problems with these type of issues before, and it seems to be resurfacing.
What do you reckon? Do you think, putting aside what's happened, do you think he's done enough to get into the test team from a preparation point of view? I'm going to put all that other stuff to the side, but just from what you've seen and from an injury perspective, what he's coming back from and what you saw over the last few days, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, definitely his wicket-keeping is of the highest standard. It's how he pulls up. You know, it's a four-day game. He's playing in the second 11 now. He certainly would have liked more runs. Hopefully he gets another bat. Yeah, it's how he pulls up after doing this repetitively keeping. You know, it's very hard on his neck. But he's the incumbent, I suppose, so it's his spot to lose. If he can prove his fitness and some form, I can only assume that he will be the keeper for the first test.
And then back on the other thing, do you think Cricket Tasmania are going to cop it from Cricket Australia, or you reckon they'll just let that slide?
Oh, I think they'll be copping it behind closed doors. You know, Cricket Australia didn't respond yesterday. I'm not sure they will respond publicly, but I reckon the Andrew Gagan's phone would have been running pretty hot yesterday afternoon.
Were you proud of the statement? As a Tasmanian, Stubbsy, a proud Tasmanian, were you proud of the Cricket Tasmania's stance and support, or do you think, oh boy, this is a bit interesting?
My first view on it was from a story point of view, knowing what a big story it was going to be. I think they certainly showed loyalty to Tim that maybe Cricket Australia didn't. I think certainly Tim would have been proud of Cricket Tasmania for the stance they've taken. What happens from here is going to be interesting. I mean, what do Cricket Tasmania do next? Do they just move on now? They've made their statement and that's done, or is there other avenues that they can take? I'm not sure what they would be, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. The other little thing in the backdrop is that Cricket Tasmania is also trying to be in the in a position to host the fifth Ashes Test.
Yes.
Should Perth not be unable to host it, so I'm sure that this statement's not going to help that cause at all.
It rubbed people off the wrong way, and that wasn't my intention, but I'm just aspiring to, you know, get the best out of myself. Yeah, I guess the nerves are still there. Like, it's been a childhood dream of mine, but yeah, just really extremely excited to end up at the club.
I must admit, I can't recall as much fanfare about a young talent as we've had with Nick Dacos in the last couple of months leading up to the NAB AFL draft. Night one tonight, the first round of picks will be selected by their clubs, and Nick Dacos will be going to Collingwood. It's just a matter of what number he goes. Derek Hine is the Collingwood list manager who's in charge of it all tonight and joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Derek.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you on draft day?
Well, it's... Well, it's a pretty easy get tonight, isn't it?
we just have to wait. You know, like obviously there's a fair bit of commentary around where the bid comes, but we've sort of been pretty consistent in that we're preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. So we'll just sit back and wait. Hopefully, I'm tipping we're not going to have to wait too long. whether that's sort of 1, 2, 3, or 4 will remain to be seen.
So how do you play this situation? Do you talk to the other clubs and try and get a gauge on who's interested in selecting him and nominating him as part of this process, or do you just let the gods do it for you?
No, not really. I mean, all these guys, you know, all the guys, you know, the managers and the list managers have been around for a long time, and we just got to respect their business. We've got to respect their ratings. You know, sometimes there's a little bit of goodwill here and there, but, you know, not really. As long as we've got an understanding of the range and we're thinking that 2, 3, 4 bracket, and we just prepare for it. I mean, I'm really reluctant to put any club, whether it be GWS or Gold Coast or North Melbourne, in a position where they feel that they have to tell us what they're doing. I wouldn't do that for them.
Yeah.
And I certainly respect the way that they go about. And if the call comes or the bid comes at 2 or 3, well, I'll respect their decision.
So when that's done, and I want to get back to Nick himself shortly, but when that's done, how do you manipulate trying to get back into the draft?
Well, I think, to this date now, like pre-draft, we've already completed 7 trades.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, when you count in Nathan and Nathan Kruger and Lipinski and these guys coming in, plus the pick. So at the moment, we'll have 6 selections. I should say we've got the scope for 6 selections. So it'll depend where that bid comes. So if the bid come at, let's say, if the bid come at 4, well, yep, our next selection would be 40-41.
Yep.
And then, so the conversation for us, or is the thinking around us at that particular pick, is, well, okay, do we trade out the 36 and roll back, or we hang on to the 41? Or so these are the scenarios we're sort of rolling through at the moment, you know, because the 41 could potentially be quite valuable post-first round, and you know better than anyone, Daniel, that, you know, there is a little bit of jockeying to position when, oh, okay, that plays. Yeah, I think last year, I think we moved 6 spots and brought in 2 future thirds. So
yeah,
that's the sort of movement that can potentially happen. I don't think there's going to be an enormous amount of that this year, but, you know, who knows?
Yes, who knows? Anything could happen. Hey, Derek, I'm just interested, if Nick Dacos' name was Nick Davison... Well, I was going to say Nick Davis, although I shouldn't say Nick Davis. So if he was just someone that didn't have...
Don't do that to me, Adam.
But I'm just interested in... There's so much excitement about Nick, and it is a little bit because of his surname, but also it's because of what he can do. And I've been fortunate enough to see him play for the last 3 or 4 years, so I'm aware of his talent. But from you, why is he so exciting?
Look, I think he's, you know, as you say, you've followed him for 2 or 3 years, and I think he's so multidimensional in where he plays. You know, he could potentially, you know, walk into the senior team and play as a high back, a wing, roll through the midfield, play as a high forward. So he's just got so much scope to his game. He hasn't got the complete game, clearly, but he's got all the tools to suggest that he's going to play senior football relatively quickly. And look, it's really important for us, and we're really mindful of not putting any undue pressure on Nick, because that's going to come from other quarters anyway, externally. So internally, we need to make sure that he fits into the development program with us. We've got a really strong body of young boys between 18 and 21, that he's now just one of them. And he'll be treated no differently. And it's so we'll just let him sort of assimilate into our program. Obviously, he's got a little bit more of an understanding through our father-son program and all those sorts of things. But that, you know, that's a small advantage. But, we just want him to find his feet, and then the rest will look after himself. But we don't see him any different to any one of our players, whether it's number 40, 44 or number 1.
So, because it's a really interesting one, because he's had to deal with this now for quite a while. It's not like this is just been thrust upon him in the last sort of 2 or 3 months, this sort of pressure. So when you do your interviews with prospective players, it's not just about the kicks and the handballs and the marking and the running. It's the mental side of the game. Can you sort of give us a little bit of an insight into that side with Nick as just to how grounded he is, the experience of his dad, the experience of his brother, to get him in a situation that he can cope with this external pressure?
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, clearly Nick was part of our... Nick was obviously part of their father-son program, and I deliberately sort of kept away from him, due to the expectations and those sorts of things. So, yeah, obviously I viewed from afar, if you like, and I remember going to a game at Carey, and I'm digressing a little bit here. I went to a game at Carey, and he played forward. You know, he's doing bits and pieces, and you're hearing this... Oh, you know, he's an ex-superstar and all this sort of stuff. So I've gone along and, okay, but geez, I can't see the superstar bit just yet. Anyway, so he was 15 at the time, or 16 at the time, and then this was pre-COVID. I think they were a training camp down at Deakin, and so I've rolled on down there, and this was in the, he was a bottom ager for the Metro Cup, and I've gone, watching, I go, oh shit, you're a little bit better than I thought. and then he sort of rolls out and runs a 6:15, 2K, he'd never done it before, and all this sort of stuff. But getting back to your question, Adam, when I interviewed him, and I just interviewed him as I do with any of the other guys, we have a format that we work through, and I suppose we went for about an hour and 15, thereabouts. And I suppose. The best way to describe Nick's persona, if you like, he's humbly confident. He's deeply respectful of the programs he's been in. He's deeply respectful of his coaching and his upbringing and all those sorts of things. But he's confident in his own ability. But he's not arrogant in his own ability, and there's a big difference to that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And to put it into perspective for Collingwood fans listening to this, it was 2 years ago that the starting midfield for Carey was Raoul, Anderson, Dacos. Dacos was 2 years younger than Raoul and Anderson, and he was just as good. Different to the others, probably more Anderson than Raoul, but he had the X factor just as much as the others, but still had 2 years of developing to go. So that's the scary part about that. And it's probably the best comparison, Derek, you can kind of come up with, really.
Yeah. I mean, you do understand, Adam, I'm here to talk him down, not up.
No, we've really put that to the sword, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's an undoubted talent. And I suppose he'll find his watermark tonight, and that he'll... You know, we're confident what he can bring to the group, and, you know, with our ladder picks, we're equally as confident.
The Melbourne Renegades are one win away from a WBBL final, if you don't mind, and they're going beautifully. And Sophie Molyneux, the captain, had a great series herself and joins us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Soph, good morning.
Morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. How are you feeling knowing that there's a final to be played tomorrow? You get to watch the teams, one of the teams that you'll be playing against tomorrow in the final today. What's the vibe like?
Yeah, it's a really good vibe at the moment. It's a bit weird. I haven't really been in a situation where we're not really sure who we're playing yet. We're playing tomorrow night, but I think we'll all be watching pretty closely together. And, we've got a couple of training sessions over the next day or two. And, we're just pretty pumped to get out there.
It was an indifferent finish to the competition. You dominated for most of it. Were you annoyed by the way it sort of ended?
I suppose Mackay wasn't the greatest trip for us. I think, dropping those two games at the end there wasn't ideal, but I think that's part of the Big Bash. And I think every team sort of goes through a bit of a wave. And we were just, I suppose that come at the back end, but we were able to sort of draw a line in the sand and learn a few things. And we'd rather it happen in the last two round games than tomorrow night. So we've definitely sort of moved on, learnt a lot from it, and just pumped to get back out there again.
I remember speaking to you, or we spoke to you just before the competition was starting. You were down in Hobart, and we were talking about your squad, and you talked about a young, developing, emerging squad. It's performed much better than a young, developing, emerging squad. Has that surprised you?
Yeah, I suppose it hasn't really surprised me, but it's just been really cool just to see different girls step up at different times. With Georgia Wareham doing her knee in the second round, it really sent a bit of a shock through the club and through the team. But yeah, I think we're all really proud the way we sort of bounced back straight back from that game, and we sort of haven't looked back since. And different girls have stood up at different times, and you know, girls that we probably thought weren't going to play a massive role this year at bowling four overs a game and doing it really well, and yeah, just taking on the Big Bash, which is so cool to see.
It's been some great hitting, and so for your captaincy, you took over this season. How have you found that, taking on that role within the Renegade space?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been handy to have Simon Helmet at the top there as coach. He's obviously a well experienced coach around, you know, different T20 clubs in across the world, and just to be able to bounce ideas off him and learn from him. I think not only me as captain, but I think all the girls have just really thoroughly enjoyed playing under him, and it's just been a really sort of enjoyable time to, yeah, sort of play under him and learn different ways of looking at T20 cricket.
Yeah, and tell us about some of the players that you've got there, particularly some of the Indian girls that have come across had a really good impact on this group. Harmanpreet Kerr, sorry, yep. I've stumbled over that. Sophie, you're probably more used to saying that than me.
Just Harry.
Yeah.
Just Harry.
Harry in particular has had a great impact. What's it been like having some of those players from a different country come into the environment?
Yeah, we certainly hit the jackpot with our Indians. they've been awesome for us. I think, like, the on-field performances, they sort of speak for themselves. They've, both Jemmy and Harry have led from the front, and but I think it's more the off-field, the impact they've had on a really young sort of impressionable group. I think it's, you sort of can't put value on that. I think, like, Harman's captain of India, so to have her out there in the middle is, it's priceless for us, and she's always so calm and full of wisdom. So it's been great to just sort of pick her brains, and, the runs and wickets have helped as well.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.